All right, welcome and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Theater Cleaners. Things have changed a little bit since last season. We're up in the new 12 Midnight HQ. It's our new office. It's a pretty dope spot. Hopefully we can get like a little tour video out online somewhere, whether it's on our YouTube or the 12 Midnight one. But either way, we're stoked to be back for another season. And today we're going to be talking about a dope little Tarantino flick called Kill Bill. I'm sure just about everybody and their mother may have seen that. I should be excluded from that list. But either way, we're joined here by the co-founder of 12 Midnight, the head of creative, and my boss, Dustin McLaughlin. How you doing, bud?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
First time?
Yeah.
It's exciting.
First time guest, long time fan, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Watched every single episode, I bet.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I do. All of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watched and listened.
Ooh.
I believe
in that. But anyways, so Kill Bill is a great flick, but there's definitely something you got to preface with that. So I'm going to let Dom here take it over and give the brief synopsis of what this movie is.
You make me do it every time. It's a new season. I should have expected it. All right, let's see. Brief synopsis.
Words are hard.
Again, I don't know who wrote this, but I'm going to read it word for word. Revenge is a dish best served cold. A former assassin known simply as the Bride wakes from a coma 4 years after her jealous ex-lover Bill attempts to murder her on her wedding day. Fueled by an insatiable desire for revenge, she vows to get even with every person who contributed to the loss of her unborn child. Her entire wedding party and 4 years of her life. That's, I had the wrong punctuation there.
Good job, bud. I know reading's hard for you.
It is. After, why do you have to use such insane words, Todd?
Don't blame me. Blame Google.
The bride sets off on her quest, enduring unspeakable injury and unscrupulous enemies.
Well done. There were some big words in there.
We got there.
Yeah, you got through it. He made it happen.
We made it.
Yeah, we made it. We made it.
We made it.
But either way, I mean, this movie is freaking cool. Made it. It's a fun movie. It's absolutely fucking blood, guts, and gore. I wouldn't expect anything less. It's all right. It's pretty mid, honestly, you know? But no, as always, whenever we have a guest on the show, we always let the guest pick what movie they want to talk about. Yeah. So first and foremost, I just want to see, why'd you pick this movie? What were your expectations going into it? I know it's probably your multiple time watching it. So just give us a little background as to like why you wanted to watch this and talk about it.
Well, I definitely picked it because you hadn't seen it.
Fair
and
enough.
I thought that you needed to see it because it is a cult classic, but it's a 20-year-old film, right? So it doesn't always feel the same when you watch it. But I think when you watch this film and you watch it more often, like every time you watch it, it gets better.
I agree.
And like, I'm not a person who watches films over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think each time you watch it, something different, you see something different that makes it better.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, like you just said, I hadn't watched this movie going into it, but for most movies, especially if it's my first watch, I usually watch it twice. And like, I can agree with that. There's so many like small little details.
Because you watched it twice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I watched it again this morning. But like, there's so many little details that you don't pick up on.
Yeah.
Like, especially even near the last scene, you know how it's like they have that little glass area on the dance floor and they do one shot coming up from the glass.
Yep.
Did you pick up that the bottom side of her shoe just says, fuck you?
Yeah.
It's great. Like, there's so many little details in there that it's like, it's cool to pick up on. And you don't really pick up on them.
And that shot gets cut so quick that you, like, if you're not kind of looking for it in the second time you watch it, you miss it. Like, the first time you see it, or the first time you watch it, you definitely don't see that.
No, without a doubt. But either way, there's always, like, cool shit to talk about, especially when you're talking about a Tarantino movie and he does have, like, a directorial style.
Yeah.
Which we can touch on that a little bit, but let's just talk for the most part about the film itself.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that cool?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So were there any characters within the story or any elements or any part of the story that actually like resonated with you?
I don't know if like resonated, but I get a little bit of that from the bride. Like I talk about like each time you see her, she's just getting her ass completely kicked. Oh, and, but she's so resilient. She's, you know, the movie starts off, she gets shot in the head and she lives through it. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's this, that scene when like it gets a little bit further into the movie and she's laying in the hospital room. It's like when Bill calls and he's like, she's, you know, this is not her time. This is not how we're going to kill her. And it's like, okay, she is got shot in the head. She probably got her ass kicked before that. And now she's like coming out of this coma and having to figure out how to get the strength, like wiggle your big toe.
Mm-hmm.
Like she is very resilient in that sense. And so I think that's what's really cool about that character itself. I also think didn't resonate with me, but I think she's like super an underrated character. The Oren's bodyguard.
The young schoolgirl.
Yeah. I think it is Gogo.
Yeah, she is an insanely underrated character. She's so funny, like the way that she like delivers and like acts and talks, and then she's just a badass. Like she's just like
straight up
a cold-blooded killer.
Did you know that originally she was written in to be a twin? So there's supposed to be two.
I didn't know.
Character.
That'd be wildly scarier.
They were supposed to be twins, and it was like Gogo was supposed to be the silent one, and then the other twin was supposed to have all of the lines, and then Gogo was supposed to get killed, and then basically like the twin was going to go out for vengeance, and that was going to be like attacked on scene near the end where she like comes out or whatever.
Yeah.
But ultimately they decided to go against it, which I really like that choice.
Yeah,
I think Gogo was solid.
Yeah, because you already have like the two characters that are like her henchmen, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, okay, there's this one person who's like the killer. They're obviously all killers, but this is the lawyer, you know, and this is the killer. It's like you would have a third character. It might muddy it up a little bit, you know.
I agree with that. What did you think about like the 88s though?
Like as a whole?
Yeah, like as a whole.
I mean, they seem awful. Like they're not very good at fighting, but it's like designed that way. You know what I mean? And I think that adds into like the cheesiness of some of the sound effects and like all those different things. But I think that's, you know, that's why.
Well, I was actually talking with AJ, his other co-founder, but I was talking with AJ and he was like, well, the whole like premise of the movie is based around some sort of anime culture and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So like,
oh, yeah.
That's where like the cheesy sound effects and all of that actually like play to it. But if you don't understand that going in, then the sound effects are a little like, weird.
I mean,
weird
there's a whole anime sequence in the movie,
which
I think is one of the best parts of the entire movie.
Oh,
I'm not a huge anime person, but I respect it a lot. There's some really interesting anime, sequences. And when it's done really well, it's really entertaining.
Yeah.
And Tarantino's style of the hyper gore and action just fits so perfectly with it that it's like, I was surprised by how surprised I was that it was good, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like after watching, it's like, yeah, that makes so much sense. Of course he's going to make an anime that's fucking sick and fun to watch. And it's going to be solid. But I was like kind of surprised at it. Like I never, when I first saw the movie, I never thought Tarantino was someone that would put anime in his movie. I know he has a lot of influences from like Japanese films and stuff, but I always saw him as a director being a live action kind of deal. But I mean, dude, it fits so well. It's
the best part about that is how he brings it into the rest of the film. Like blood spurt, the anime blood spurt. Like,
oh, yeah.
Throughout the film, like as people are getting their limbs cut off and
it's just like the same style in real life too. Yeah.
Well, it was cool. I even like, I made a note of it once the anime scene popped up, especially on my first watch. Cause I was just like, this feels so out of the ordinary for a Tarantino film, but it was like so fitting for the film. And like all throughout it, I was like, damn, this is really well done. It's super interesting. But I was like really curious to see what it would have been like as like live action. But I also feel like that would have taken away from it a little bit. Like, totally. I feel like it would have not added as much value to the film.
I think a whole reason why, I could be wrong, but a whole reason why they probably went with the anime style is not because it's stylistically really awesome for telling that story, but also for like content wise, I feel like the fact that she was 11 years old and it was like a pedophile deal and she killed it, I feel like that was a little questionable, and that might be why they kind of went with the anime route, not only for the stylistic choice.
I get that, but also with the way that some of the gore was going on, even in that initial scene with like the parents being killed.
Well, I think that's why they did it in anime, because they could accentuate how insane.
There's a little more
like the way that the people bend in the frame and the way that like the blood is like a lot more than in real life. Like, it's just, it can cover the screen and it can have a huge impact. And I think that's what
we
saw were going for there. Like, can we grab you? You
know? Yeah. I mean, we can see in Tarantino films, he knows how to get blood on screen.
Oh yeah.
For sure. Obviously. For sure. But so, it's like on the same point of the animation versus like live action. Can you imagine if they had like the Oren character under that bed when the blood starts raining down on her face? Like, that would have been fucking traumatizing for just about anybody in that situation. So it's like, that's where the anime definitely adds to it. And even killing the Matamoto, the crime boss.
Yeah.
And there's the blood spurt and there's the perfect silhouette of where she was sitting.
Yeah. I think it's just,
And when she shoots, when she shoots the guys
and their legs.
Yeah.
The limbs start
like such a cool, it's funny how we're like,
But it's like,
when
it's animation though, you can totally be like,
right.
Fuck yeah. That's awesome.
I mean, let's be honest. They nailed a lot of that stuff in the live action fight later too.
Definitely.
Like well.
Oh, 100%.
So it's not like, they did that just for that reason. I feel like more than beyond being able to go up and that measure. I mean, he does that already in his fight scenes. I think it helps nail that feeling of that character. Like, you almost want to root for Oren.
100%.
Like, when you're watching that, because it's like, oh shit, this is like legit, like origin story. Like,
yeah.
Oren, in my mind, how he wrote it was like also another character he wish he could have told a full story about.
Yep.
But like, she's not the protagonist in this one.
Yeah.
No.
But also, it really shows there
could be like an Oren spinoff.
But dude, that would be sick. It really Lucy Liu is tight, dude. Yeah. She's a great actress.
Yeah. It really shows how like deep his characters are sometimes. Like, it wasn't, she's not just a villain.
Right.
She is her own character. And you know what? She was, if you're playing a video game, you're coming up with a mini boss, right? You're coming along. It was one of those checkpoints in the game where you're fighting a big person. It's not just another cannon fodder. It's not all the little Yakuza guys that are her like minions. No, she's the big bad person you have to fight now. And that origin story really helps you get to that so easily and so quickly. Why explain everything bad she did to the bride when you could just show what she is instead of trying to describe it to what your character is. Let me show you who she is.
Right. Like, they're exactly the same person.
Mm-hmm.
They both have a reason for vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
Like, that's why. And they're like this, you know, the assassins, like the Deadly Viper assassination squad, right?
Yeah.
I think is such a funny name. Every time I see it on screen, I always think it's like Power Rangers or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm always like, it's the Power Ranger squad.
Dude, yeah. Sorry to jump back to the animation thing, but I did read this after I was doing, you know, our research. Like,
we do research.
We research. but no, I was doing my research and it was like saying that during that animation scene when the parents are being killed, you see how there's three people in that room, right?
Yeah.
It's Matamoto, the dude who stabs the father, and then there's a third guy that's never really doing anything or explained.
Uh-huh. Is that Bill?
That's Bill.
Ah.
Oh, shit.
That's what I read as like one of the spoilers. Yeah. So Bill was there at the like
wild
Oren becoming who she eventually becomes. He was there for the origin of that.
Yeah.
So it's like,
that's nutty.
It's another cyclical moment that's like kind of really interesting.
Yeah.
Can we talk about, are we cool moving on from that?
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the pussy wagon reveal? I think that shit's so funny.
Yeah.
So when we first come into the movie, it is first sequence after it's the El Paso, Texas murder scene from her wedding.
In the black and white.
In the black and white. It goes to her show. No. It
goes to her pulling up suburban home.
That's what I thought.
Vivica shows her pull up to,
exactly. What's her code name?
Copperhead.
Copperhead.
Yeah. Shows up to Copperhead's house.
Yeah.
It was Copperhead.
Yeah.
Oren's Cottonmouth.
Yeah, she's I had her name in here somewhere.
Uma's Black Mamba.
Yeah. Uma's Black Mamba.
But you know what's wild?
Oren is Cottonmouth.
Why do you think that they have snake names?
Because so they could have the Bill's. It's because of Bill's name.
Oh, really?
Bill's code name loosely translates to mongoose, which is like one of the few animals that's actually able to kill venomous snakes.
Got it. Interesting. But she pulls up
in the
pussy wagon.
And
without any context, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, what? And then you just kind of like just accept it because that's just what it is. It's like, what kind of fucking so outlandish and so Tarantino to have something like
that's
that
the entire movie.
In the movie. Yeah, he probably, I don't know how he thought of this movie, but I could justify this in my own mind. He probably thought of what's a really funny way for a character to show up on screen. Oh, they come in an outrageous car. What's that outrageous car? A pussy wagon. Okay, where do they get that pussy wagon?
Okay.
And they go on to the story from there.
I got 2 points on that topic. Okay.
Well, hold on real quick. But then, and then when it's revealed where she gets the car from, it's so perfect in world for like how fucked up it is.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That it's just like, it's like, damn, that's such a good payoff for that like setup in the beginning.
It's just like, you know, the plot is going to be awesome.
And Tarantino does a masterful job at telling stories out of order.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. Because I didn't notice this until my second watch is when she gets back into the wagon. She crosses off the, it's and the second Oren's name down.
Crossed off. Yeah.
Oren's already crossed off. Yeah. I didn't pick up on that on the first watch. But my 2 points that I was going to bring up.
Yeah, go back.
So the origin of this film came between Quentin Tarantino and Uma Thurman having a discussion of the types of movies that they would want to make in the course of their careers. And Tarantino came up with like...
And that's where this idea came from?
It spawned from that.
That's amazing.
So basically the concept of The Bride was the first thing to come together. And you see at the end credits, it's based on the story from, I think it's like Q and U. So it doesn't say Quentin Uma wrote it. They just say like Q and U and in the end credits, which is like a really interesting thing. And Uma Thurman actually is who came up with the concept of The Bride.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that's kind of surprising that I even put that on there because Tarantino is kind of known for taking credit for writing of everything when he shared writing with people. So it's
absolutely,
it's interesting. But
the second tidbit that I had, Tarantino owns the pussy wagon. That is his personal car that he owns, and he drove it as his daily driver to promote Kill Bill Volume 2.
It's a good PR stunt.
He that also is. Loaned it out to Beyonce.
Kind of horrifying though.
He
was that in a Beyonce music video?
Yeah. And I want to say Missy Elliott. No, I think it's a Beyonce and like Lady Gaga song.
That's fucking amazing.
Right? It's like, that's dude, great. That car lives beyond the movie. And what's great about it is part of it being a cult classic and the fact that like pop culture has kept this movie so relevant for so long.
Speaking of Pussy Wagon.
Oh, God.
Where are we going?
Hang on.
Where are we going? We're taking a left turn.
No.
We need a sidebar real quick.
Speaking of the car, I just thought it was a funnier way to introduce that. Is something that I find really like a really good moment in the movie was it kind of throws you off a little bit is after she's in the hospital and she's in the car and she's figuring out, first of all, there's a lot of feet shot. This like, if you know, like everybody knows Tarantino likes feet. This movie is like a step up from that. Like it's ridiculous amount of how much.
Yo, I saw that in your notes on the run of show before I even watched it. And like,
you were kind of prepared for it. And you were not prepared for how much.
Dude, it made it so evident. I couldn't get past it.
Yeah. It's like Tarantino, like Inglourious Basterds. I think there's like maybe one or two scenes with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This movie, there's a whole lot and it comes out of nowhere. And it's almost funny sometimes.
And it's close up.
Like, yeah, and it's close up. It's real. It's weird.
The only one that didn't make sense to me at all, though,
was when she stepped on the gas.
No. It was when near the end of the movie and they're at the blue, whatever the final location is. Yeah. They're there and it's the band, the 5, 6, 7, 8.
Oh, yeah.
And the lead singer all is just shoeless. Barefoot.
It wasn't just the lead singer.
They're all barefoot. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So random. Yeah, it was like just a random close-up shot of that. That was the one that I was like, why?
Yeah. But going back real quick, Pussy Wagon. She's trying to wiggle her toes because she's like paralyzed in her legs and she's trying to regain the movement. And it's like, she wiggles her toe and she's like, now the hard part's done. And it goes 13 hours later. You're expecting some jump cut to like some crazy situation. No, she just gets out of the car, gets in and drives away.
I
thought that was such a great moment. It's just like, it's so grounded in like reality that it's like, it doesn't just happen to the next thing. It's like 13 hours later, she finally gets
and she's
like
still walking
back.
Like
and she's
Bambi,
like wobbly. Yeah. It's like, well, it's funny. I was like, that's such a good moment. Just a little detail.
The dialogue in that moment is actually fantastic because it's literally just like, now the hard part's over. Let's get these other piggies wiggling. And it's like, that is a line of dialogue that's like, that's not easy to write Like, it seems easy when you're watching it.
I mean, it's but easy, like, for him to write when he likes feet that much, probably.
Well, and honestly, it's not easy to act.
It's not.
Right.
And that's why she's, like, so great in this
oh,
movie.
Yeah, for,
like,
sure.
No, why she got so many
subtle
noms, you know?
She's subtle.
Yeah, she's so good.
I just thought that moment so great. It's just like, you think it's going to, like, jump straight to, like, action. It's like, nope. She's just, like, getting, like, out of the car.
The parking garage.
Yeah.
And this is, and so, the ground in the bottom of the truck.
It's such a dumb little moment. It's just like, it's not like, I wouldn't say it's humor, but it's, like, almost humorous, that moment.
That's
just
like moments in this movie so are funny. And that's what you get more and more each time you watch it.
Another one of those ones when that Yakuza kid, like the little teenager is like,
you don't fuck around with the Yakuza.
And he just goes running away. It's, like, great. Like, little moments like that.
Cuts his sword.
Yeah.
Just breaks it down. Kid's already... What was great too is with the silhouette, you can see how still and steady her sword is in the silhouette, and he's just like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just so many little moments like that are just like little beats. They're just like a single beat or like a couple moments in the movie where it's just like something like that. It's just like a little bit of humor. He does it in all of his movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like Inglourious Basterds, little examples of that. Just like a beat of like just a little funny in some crazy intense scenes and stuff.
Oh yeah.
It's just like, he's master at that.
That's like why I like when she pulls up to the house and then they have the fight.
And then after it's Pussy Wagon.
And then she's like, they have that fight in the living room. The kid comes home and then she's like, you want some coffee?
Oh, yeah.
And it's
okay.
Like, what? They were just like fighting. Now she's offering her coffee. And then obviously, like in the kitchen, when she turns on her and shoots at her.
Yeah.
And then that moment when she throws the knife and it just sticks in her, it's like, oh shit. It kind of like brought this like humorous moment. And then you were like, oh my God, what just happened?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And that's one of my favorite, like, this sounds insane, but that's one of my favorite kills of the whole movie.
The knife kill?
That. Yeah.
No, that doesn't because sound insane. So I get abrupt. It. There's so many. There's,
yeah.
Her body count was like 95 or something like that. But like, with that same scene with the kitchen and everything like that, right when they walk into the kitchen, there's a pure overhead shot of the kitchen. Yeah. And I remember taking note of it and I was like, this doesn't make sense why they would do this. And obviously it's a Tarantino film. Everything gets tied back, but it wasn't until after she's dead and they go back to that same shot and you just see all the like Fruit Loops or whatever they were scattered on the ground. And it was just like a really interesting composition to the frame that it was just like, shit, that's cool.
And the daughter is just like sees it, which is like so insane.
It was insane. And like, honestly,
the daughter was so chill about it.
Yeah. Like, she was just like,
but I love what the bride had said to her. It was just like, hey, like down the line, if you want revenge, like I'm waiting. I'm like, come like, at
this
me.
This is
bro.
About revenge. And she understands if you want to take revenge, I'm not going to blame you.
It's the like, cycle of their lives, like, of all these people's lives. It's like, they're all the same exact character. You're just seeing it from
different
perspective, the bride's perspective.
Yeah.
And it's so just that's what's crazy.
That's always like, so
they have
fun.
Another overhead shot too. Similar to that later at the House of Blue, whatever, when she's going into the bathroom and it goes
over the walls
and then it comes down back into like right in front of her and close
that
up.
That probably had to be such like a technically difficult shot.
Oh yeah,
like I don't know what kind of crane they were using for that, but that's like that's like because it goes up and over is not a problem. Up and over and back down, that's like where's that? Where's the
how'd
camera
you guys pull that one?
I mean, I wonder if there's like a situation where maybe like the set came apart in that section where they
I feel like
a camera handoff.
Does it follow her and then go up and over?
Yep, it's like starts following her from coming down the stairs. You see her coming down the stairs. You see her feet in the Asics and the yellow Asics like coming down the
stairs.
That's
technically a really
and then
shot.
It kind of comes around the stairwell.
It might
follows her into the bathroom.
Might be a handoff from steady to crane to steady or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Could be. That would just be technically hard as hell, man.
Yeah, that would be insane.
But with that same bathroom scene is when I can't remember the character's name or her first name. Her last name is Dreyfus.
Julia
Dreyfus. Her character.
Is it Julie or is it Julie? I think it's Julie.
Julie Dreyfus,
Because there is a Julia Dreyfus, and I was trying to find her, and I was like, that's not the right one. That's the one.
Right.
That's the one from Seinfeld.
That's Julia Louise Dreyfus.
Yeah. But either way, when she walks into the bathroom and Uman's already in her stall or whatever, did you see how they had that frosted glass and it like unfrosted
and it went clear? Yeah.
Dude, I was so like baffled at that shot.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like really interesting. Do you not
I think I like. I it can't
shows
picture
you that she's. In
I know
the
what
bathroom,
you're talking
basically.
About. Was it like a silhouette, or did it like did the glass become unfrosted?
The glass became basically like unfrosted.
Yeah,
it was like a.
I must have
turn.
Missed. I must like, have missed that. I just kind of remember a silhouette from that.
No, dude, Dreyfus like exits frame left, and then it just unfrosts.
She goes to like the mirror, and then answers her phone, and she's in the stall. Like the bride is in the stall,
and then it's like a reverse shot. Right. Of her within the stall after the frost, and then it turns
do
to
you
her
see
like
it
trying
change?
Open the door.
Yeah, you see it change.
I fully see it change.
There's like fancy windows like that. It's like really cool. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it was a cool.
I'll have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, it was like a cool technical
that
moment.
In that same scene is an example of really solid sound design in this movie, where you get such a visceral reaction because she hears the phone ring.
Yeah,
and she knows that to her core who's calling in that moment. It's like the.
Great job of setting up the viewer to understand that as well. It doesn't, you hear that song or whatever two different times before that moment.
I will say that's another moment where Tarantino tells stories out of order so well, it never feels jarring or confusing in at least in this movie when he's jumping around the timeline like crazy.
Yeah.
Because he is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like goes, the whole time.
He starts and then goes there and then goes back 4 years and then goes forward 4 years.
But
and then,
it never feels jarring. Yeah. It all feels like it makes sense.
Well, it also goes into him telling all of his stories like within chapters.
Yeah.
Because he also has that brief beat to like preface before he switches something up.
That's why it's like so unique. And like, that's why it is a cult classic. Why people like see the poster and resonate with it. Because it's so different and unique, and the plot like continues to unfold but switches up at the same time, like it's just all like happening in such a like creative way that it's fun to watch, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So
well, like honestly the whole movie is absolutely fun to watch, and there's so many like little elements that are like super interesting. Like I did show you this earlier today actually, but it's like when Uma Thurman's character is traveling, like each time you only see her name if you like are really paying attention. Every time they show a plane ticket, it reveals her name. And like early on in the movie, like in that initial scene, you can hear Bill keep saying kiddo, and it's like you don't know anything yet, so you just think it's like a term of endearment, but it's like it's her last name, and it's like you don't really pick up on that until you start watching volume two, basically.
Yeah.
But even then, when she gets out
of did you watch both already?
Nah, Google works just as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good start to you.
Nah, but it's cool. But even then, when she lands in Tokyo, you see...
With her samurai sword she just takes on the plane.
Dude, I don't think you noticed. I know they had cup holders for samurai swords. That's such a Tarantino universe thing.
And the people behind her have a samurai sword also. Okay.
The one across the
road. It makes it not be jarring.
Yeah, it's like it's just an in-universe thing for, I guess, Arrow... I thought that was a great name for an airline, Air O.
Yeah.
It's a good.
Is that one of the seven Tarantino brands?
I don't know, maybe.
But they had the cigarette one, the big
that's
apple or
exactly
whatever.
That's exactly what I was just going to bring up. Is when she lands in, it's red apple cigarettes. And when she lands, she walks past it. And the Julie Dreyfus is the model on the billboard.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I think I did realize that, but without like realizing it. You know what I mean?
You want to know another like really dumb but super cool fact? Is, you know that it looks so fake, but when the plane's coming to land in Tokyo right over all the buildings.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a miniature set. That's the set from Godzilla.
Oh, nice.
That's the set from Godzilla.
Because they shot a lot of this on location. Like they went to Tokyo for a lot of this.
But that was the set.
From Godzilla.
So they had it in some studio in Tokyo or something like that?
Yep.
That's pretty sick.
Super dope.
That's from like a long time ago. So I'm surprised that they like had that.
Dude, you know how many times that set's been like reused?
No.
Like a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's a great way of reusing resources. Well,
good point. Yeah.
We're all about that.
No, that's sick. But like it's super fake, but it feels perfect for this kind of movie.
That's
right.
Yeah,
it calls back. I mean, it does quite literally, like you're saying, it is the set, but it calls back to all the Japanese movies that he takes influences for, and telling this kind of specific story. Like this kind of brings me to the next point. I don't know if you guys are ready to move on, but it's kind of about elements of the film.
Yeah.
What elements is this too far?
Give me one brief moment.
Do it.
Because we were already talking about like Tarantino as a director.
Actually, no, let's skip your point.
Hey, fair enough.
Just kidding.
It's going to be brief. All right. I had started watching the QT8, the first eight. It's all of Tarantino's like producers, actors, all talking about the way he makes his movies and everything like that. But the film opens up with a quote from Tarantino himself. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes well with what we're talking about. He says, "Movies are my religion and God is my patron. When I make a movie, I want it to be everything to me. Like I would die for it." And it's like, he believes so hard in cinema that like, he will tie back everything to another movie. He pays homage to where it's due. And that's who he is as a director. And that's what he is. And that's why he's only going to make 10, is because he's going to go balls to the wall for all 10 of them and make them absolutely classic.
And an interesting point about that 10 is he considers, as far as I know, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I've heard this. He considers Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 one film.
They are one film because
it was originally shot as one film.
Yeah, the original screenplay is one film, but it was mm-hmm. early on into the production cycle that they decided to split it up into two films. And that actually fucked up part of their marketing plan, because the original marketing plan had billboards up that said
Kill Bill.
Uma Thurman kills Bill in 2003. Mm. Volume 2 wasn't out till 2004.
Got it.
Yeah.
Interesting. But yeah, because he didn't want to sacrifice. This is how much of a probably pain in the ass for a lot of people.
Oh, no.
But how much of a dedicated to his art he is, like you said on the quote, is the fact that he didn't want to sacrifice scenes to cut down the movie to make it fit into one. So he made it two, which I think is like, that's dedication for what you want. Like, if you know you want to tell that story in a very specific way, you're not going to sacrifice it. But we all know from production side, that's a fucking pain in the ass.
Oh, that's a big ass.
It's a big pain in the ass.
That's like why, Jesus. Like, you know, we were talking about Volume 1, but in Volume 2, there's a car wreck. Yeah. And she, like, actually did a stunt. And they, like, she talks about how she's, like, never been the same since that. Because she wrecked the car and, like.
Was it like an out? Like,
there's a behind like the scene outtake, video.
Like, she didn't mean, like, it wasn't supposed to happen?
I think it was meant to happen, but it was a stunt that was happening. And she's, like, he essentially, like, pushed her into doing the stunt. And she I'm pretty sure that there was there's a ton of articles about this happening, how she like spoke out about how this was like that pushed her too far and mm-hmm. she felt like she had to do it a little bit.
Tarantino has been known to have that influence on actors, is like
you feel the pressure of
what's her name in Inglourious Basterds, like the scene where she's being choked is like actually him choking her. It's like really fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a reputation for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's like,
that's wild.
What happens when somebody is like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like somebody is that
so
dedicated. Yeah. They don't.
It's not right, but
no, they have unrealistic expectations because they think that everybody on the project is going to feel the same way about the project that he does.
100%,
which isn't true. An expectation.
Which is not, fair for people.
But especially when it's the job, and it's not like for him. It's not just the job. It's his life, kind of. And everybody else, like a lot of people on that, sure, they might care a lot about it, but shit, I mean, there's a lot more to life than that, making that movie kind of deal. So,
well, and I think like, you know, Uma Thurman was also just like so big in this film that like she did care like a lot about whether,
because
like you said, they worked on this idea together and like, but like she came from, you know, when she did Pulp Fiction, what was crazy about her character, like from Pulp Fiction to here, it was just literally like a complete 180 of a character.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
And but I feel like this is really like the film that people, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like people know The Yellow and know Uma Thurman from that.
Oh, it's iconic.
I feel like that's even why, if you haven't seen the movie, you still know it from
seeing exactly
the movie
poster.
Uma Thurman that they advertise for it or whatever.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Uma Thurman has the ride. Kind of feel like you just have to.
That's another layer of the Tarantino, though, is that movie poster is black, yellow, and red, which is a staple of movie posters from like the 50s and 60s.
True.
That's like Reefer Madness. Like that movie poster literally is black, white, yellow, red.
Well, and it's like title design.
He does that so well.
Subtitles as well.
Yep.
All of his title cards and all of his title sequences and all that kind of stuff, he does so fantastically well.
Yeah.
Like literally the logos and stuff that he puts into the movie at the beginning are part of his art, mm-hmm. and he cares so much about it. So when he's like, when you're seeing these title sequences at the beginning of the movie, it sets you up. Just like, it's literally just like their production house, like logo. There's so much effort put into it that it's putting you like in a mindset for this film. It was made in 2002 and 2003. Like, it came out in 2003.
Yeah.
But the title sequence looks like it's from the 70s.
Absolutely.
And it's like, it's putting you in this mind of like, this is the kind of movie I'm about to watch.
Yeah. Well, like, it's fantastic. I've seen it so many times. I said to Todd the other day, I told him, I was like, man, I remember like in the 90s, and I was like, he's like, it was made in 2003. And I was like, man, it felt like a 90s film, mm-hmm. even sometimes in some parts, like, where I was like, I thought that came out in the 90s.
And this kind of goes to that point of what I was going to ask earlier, is what are various elements of the film that like really it excels in?
Yeah.
And for me, the main thing it does better than most other movies in this kind of similar genre is style. And this goes with all of these little things we're just saying, has everything to do with the style. Makes you feel like you're watching a 70s, 80s action movie, or like you're watching a Kurosawa movie,
yeah,
or like you're watching Lee. A Western,
yeah,
or you're watching a Bruce Lee film. Like, it's just like all these little details, the title cards at the beginning, just with the music, the dun dun,
yeah,
dun, it's like,
and the siren, it's like,
yeah,
you know, yeah. Like, it comes on, like, it's just like, and then you see the close up of her, like every time she's about to,
it's just so like the style is unmatched in this movie.
Yeah it's cool.
Yeah,
no, mine for that, like the elements that really got my mind thinking a lot was actually the fact that like RZA did the soundtrack to it. And like, I don't know if you know a lot of history about Wu-Tang, but like a lot of the driving factor of Wu-Tang is these classic kung fu movies, and it's like he drew a lot of his inspiration for the early days of Wu-Tang from those classic kung fu movies. So for him to do a soundtrack and score for a kung fu movie, like, he nailed it to a T, did it justice, and made it culturally relevant for the time that it was released, which is great. And it does tie in some of the stuff you were talking about with the style, of the fact that he brings in like old west sounding soundtrack during some of the kung fu battle scenes.
Yeah,
like, and it's, those are the micro elements that like get you going.
Let's be honest, if we're gonna break down what an old like samurai movie is, it's literally a Japanese western.
Yeah,
like
legit.
Like, Kurosawa made a lot of samurai movies, but if we're looking at like the style and how it was shot, and like maybe not how it was shot, but like, yeah, I guess like compositions and stuff like mm-hmm. that, it's just like a western movie. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of the western like movies that influence, like a great example of this is The Magnificent Seven, the original and the remake,
mm-hmm.
were both technically based off of Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much influence from that. And it's just like, I don't know. I love a Western. I love a good samurai movie. Like, and Tarantino makes it modern and does it so well.
Yeah.
That's why I like Tarantino movies so much, is like, he has all those influences from it and just does it so well. Like, he refines it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he references his influences so often and so common that it's like, even if you're not a fan of like classic cinema, you're still going to enjoy it. You mm-hmm. might not get all the references, but it's still so fun to see. And it's like, even then, it might evoke an emotion that you have from like being a child and watching one of your parents' old movies or something like that. Yeah. It's the same,
exactly.
same feeling.
But I would say, I don't know if you guys agree, but I would say that because he cares so much about it, and like, that's his like life, and like, that's his style, is that it doesn't feel like he's calling all these like, he's creating homages to all these movies, but because he's so in love with that, it's not obviously like, oh, that's an homage moment. No, this is it's just the movie. It just, the entire movie is an homage to that. So it's not like you've seen some movies where it's like, oh, that moment's like a callback to this movie.
Yeah.
This whole movie is a callback
to another movie,
to a whole era of everything.
Oh, yeah.
But it doesn't feel like that because it feels so fitting.
Even the like server guy works. He's like dressed like Charlie Brown.
Like, that's such a random funny moment.
That's also great. Literally his character's name in the credits
is Charlie Brown.
His name in the credits is Charlie.
I mean,
Brown.
He looks like, you know, Charlie
it's
Brown.
I didn't the squiggle. Yeah, I didn't, that's I all
didn't
it does.
See
it.
I well, the bald see head and yeah.
I didn't see it until I was like, oh, like you could just see he's wearing a yellow kimono and stuff. But then when he's walking up the stairs, when he's like fighting with the, I don't know if it's his wife or the other manager or whatever.
Yeah. The manager.
He's about to like deliver the drinks to them is when I noticed it. I was like, oh shit, he looks like Charlie Brown. And like the next scene later, he's like, what are you doing,
like Charlie Brown?
Yeah.
Dude, like, that was great. Oh, that was a great little touch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh man.
No, I think that's like what is, you know, in this spot, like what we were talking about for like the elements of the film, sound effects, music, like all of the audio of the film is also like, I mean, in general, I think that's one of the things that always gets overlooked of a movie, but it's so cool. Like in this film, sometimes it's not always the case. Sometimes it's more direct, like at the beginning, bang, bang, when she's gets shot. And then at the end or not that towards the end, when the 5678s are playing, what is it? Woohoo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this whole shit is about to go down.
Oh, that was a great moment.
It's so like more, that's like more of like using music in a juxtaposition way than at the beginning. It's so direct and like on the nose of what's happening. But that's what's cool about it is like it's designed in a way to like get you to feel. And the sound is like corny and cheesy, but it's like Bruce Lee.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's, you know, so it's like so, that. There's so many moments in this movie where it's like, if you were looking at it as if it was like realism, you'd be pulled out, but it doesn't, it's not about realism.
Yeah.
It's about the movie.
Right.
Like it's like, it's the style and the movie nails the style so well. It doesn't feel weird or out of place. Like you've seen movies. It's like, that feels weird that this moment happened. Like an example of something I watched recently was the new Indiana Jones movie. There's like these fucking like random cart chases that feel kind of out of like, there's this, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but there's a scene where there's like eels, they're underwater and they're like getting attacked by eels. It's like, why is that in the movie? Like, just, like you had a different part of suspense. I could go on about that.
Yeah.
But it's just like these moments that feel out of place, but there's so many moments that could feel out of place in this movie, but because it's so grounded in its reality, you don't care.
Well, that's why he's so good at like tying a bow on it too at the end.
Yeah.
Because there are some like unknowns. And then at the end, you're like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how many spoilers you guys are giving on these podcasts.
We give it all away.
Everybody,
but it's like, you know, they tie that bow and he's like, oh, does she know her daughter's still alive?
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, fuck, now I gotta go watch too.
Yeah. Dude, honestly, I don't know if they split the movie up knowing exactly where they're gonna split it. I don't know the timeline. You know more than me.
I'm actually curious about that as well. Because
it was
shot as
one movie, but fuck, they nailed it to be two so well.
Because also the opening to two feels like way different. It's definitely like a callback to like an old movie about Hollywood where she's driving down through like Santa Monica or whatever and she's doing her narration at the start of that. I did start it. I was curious to see how it opened. No, I was just really curious.
It's good. It's like, just like one is like,
yeah,
and better.
Yeah. But no, back to the SFX and like some of the sound stuff you were talking about.
Yeah.
Did y'all catch the Wilhelm screams? Oh,
yeah.
The Wilhelm what?
I caught
the Wilhelm
one.
Screams?
Like, no.
Okay, do you know what that is?
No.
So it's a huge trope through like all of cinema, and it ties back to like the OG. No, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
You're gonna do it?
I'll do it. Yeah.
All right.
But it's like, it's a famous scream from like old 30s movie that gets used across all of like high cinema, and it's a running joke within the industry.
Okay.
So think back to like Star Wars when they're in the Death Star, they shoot someone and they like fall off the edge into the pit.
Yeah.
They always do that.
I don't know anything about Star Wars.
It's like the scream. It's like R2-D2 falling off, like whatever, you know.
So what does this happen when like the 88s are getting killed? Yeah.
That
okay.
scream.
Yeah,
that
okay.
scream.
Yeah.
That scream. That is a famous.
Yeah.
Do it to the mic. Yeah. So that's the Wilhelm scream. It's a huge trope and a running joke within the industry of like whenever you have
action
a moment
movies,
to do it.
Yeah.
You do it.
It's usually paired with a character getting hit,
thrown,
knocked off of something.
Like, so the guy
shot.
Falling into the pool.
Yeah.
No, I think it was. I don't know if it was that one.
No, there
it was.
A,
I think it was just a random.
It was a random.
Just getting like sliced.
Yeah.
And he goes,
It was a random 88 in like a pack of them.
Okay.
Yeah. But
and
there was
it's,
two.
It's just like it's a trope in movies in action sequences to have a Wilhelm scream. Where I usually whenever I like recognize it is the character getting shot, sliced, stabbed, getting knocked off something and always throwing their hands up.
I feel like it's an over-dramaticized death.
And okay. I think the origins of that little history lesson is way back from like an old movie.
I think it was 1930s.
I thought it was a Western.
Yeah.
Where it first came up, he got shot with an arrow or something, and that's the sound.
Like, I feel like I've heard of that, but I didn't really grasp it, I guess.
From an old movie.
Also, there's like conflicting like evidence saying it might have been from a different movie.
Okay.
I don't know. It was a long time since I learned.
But I didn't. They use it a lot in this. I didn't even know.
They used it twice in this movie.
Okay.
Usually movies will give it like one or two goes. Because it's like a little, just like a fun moment.
Yeah.
It's probably in Indiana Jones a few times.
There's actually like a whole YouTube video that breaks down like the influential aspects of the Scream and like what made it stand out and become so notable. And it has to do with like the decibels and the frequency at which it's going on.
It's just a fun sound.
Okay. Yeah. It's hilarious. It's
like we need to use one on the podcast maybe.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think we just did. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Maybe it should be the intro.
Oh,
maybe.
Fair enough.
Maybe we should. Is it copyrighted? Yeah. Who knows?
No. How would everybody use it in the,
I don't know. Maybe you just want to, it's so important that you want to get the rights to it. I don't know.
I guess so.
But yeah, we were talking about the sound and like the sound effects and all that and the music. But then there's also like, obviously, like we have not talked for some reason about the whistling in the hallway. Yeah. It's like, you know, that's all you know it by.
That's probably a horrible thing to do into a mic right now. People probably loved you for that.
Well, and
voice enhanced, baby.
That's all you know it from that movie. But then it's just literally in that one scene. You know, when she's in the hallway in the hospital.
Oh yeah. Being a modern viewer and hearing that whistle, I kept waiting for someone to come in and go, Rob Stone, dude, Rob Stone. But you know,
I really want to whistle it now that you whistled it. So like, thanks a lot. It's like, not at
me. It's so catchy.
It's so catchy.
You gotta do it.
No, I
do
can.
It. Whistle it.
I know, but I'm going to do it all day now because you fucks.
Now it's stuck in your head.
Yeah, it is. Dude, thanks a lot. Yeah, true.
I got that scene, though, in general, is really cool because of all the close-ups, like the extreme close-ups. Mm-hmm. And then they have the split screen and they like, I don't know why that's the artistic choice to all of a sudden go to this like extreme close up, and it's just like her mouth and whatever. And then you see the needle.
Surprisingly, not the feet.
Yeah,
like the extreme close-up. I mean, I
think he did show a little bit of
was
that,
it?
Maybe.
I think
that. Oh, you know what? Was it her walking? It was her walking, but no bare feet. It wasn't bare feet.
No. She's in the heels, but she's walking. There's a lot of like foot walking shots.
Yeah,
like that.
I thought you were gonna say there's a lot of foot fetish, and yes,
that too. Yeah,
there is.
I mean, he. Yeah.
We've already established.
So let's move on from Matt.
Yeah, visual style. You're talking about how they go split screen at some points. The editing is great in this movie.
Yeah, it's incredible.
The fight sequences cut so well, but they're also shot in a way that it doesn't feel like shaky cam. It doesn't feel hard to follow.
No.
It's so clean. The amount of choreography for those fights would have to be insane.
Oh, I mean, they had a camera on like wires and stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, just choreography for all the actors.
Oh, well, yeah. The last fight scene took 8 weeks to get.
That would be the reason. Imagine 8 weeks, dude.
Imagine how many
days a week
money,
do you think
like,
they're shooting?
Yo, actually, we didn't get it.
You know, they spent over like $50,000 on swords alone for the film. Sure.
It's amazing.
Because he actually like made those swords, no?
I don't know if they got made. I know they just bought a shit ton of them.
I would not be. How many hours a day are they shooting? 10 to 12?
They were probably 12
or 16, like overtime.
No way they're shooting 16-hour days.
I mean, they might have been shooting overtime. That's crazy.
That's wild.
But I also bet there's a lot of day players
going on. Was the budget? 22 million or 30 million or something like that?
It was, I think it was around like 30 million. I got it here in the notes.
That'd be rough. Shooting features sucks. It's a bitch.
Yeah, you done a lot of
them. Money goes quick.
Done a few of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Why did I not know that?
That sounded like a...
They're not great. They suck.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
I mean, that budget's like a lot, but it's also for what this is, it's not.
I mean, it was a $55 million budget.
Oh, was it 50?
I'm not going to act like you've seen any of the features I've shot.
Yeah, I would have. But either way, for a $55 million budget, they spent, you know, a good chunk of change on the swords. They also ended up shooting on location. They sent a shitload of people out to Tokyo for like 2 weeks to go and scout.
Well, and the extras are like trained. You know, you can't just like get a guy off the street for this job.
I can't remember.
Maybe in Japan, I don't know.
Yeah. I can't remember the exact amount, but I believe between the two movies, they used over like 500 gallons worth of fake blood.
That's damn amazing.
Yeah. It's a lot of
that's blood. A lot of that's fake. A
think
lot
of 500 milk jugs.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
That's a lot, a lot.
That's a lot. That's,
well, I mean, when it's
that's more than
everywhere
one person oh, has yeah in their body.
So I thought I read something because I started doing I, when I realized Todd does a ton of research for these.
He does do a lot of research.
I was like, fuck, I got to come prepared. But I saw something, and I don't know if this is true on the internet, about they use like condoms for the fake blood.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, yeah. That's
for,
actually
for squibs.
Yeah,
for
yeah
squibs. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Okay. We actually, when you're getting
talk
gunshot
about that last season?
I did at one of them, I think. I think I told a story, and it was a funny one. I can tell it again. You probably haven't heard it.
Because it's supposed to pop, and didn't yeah someone's like just expand?
Yeah, it didn't pop. So a lot of I forget who does it. I don't know if it's like it's probably prop master. So it's some department. I guess it changes, but when you're making squibs for people getting shot and yep it explodes with blood, they usually use condoms for that because it's the perfect amount of rigidity plus like poppingness, so they have a little charge on there and it just like explodes in the condom. And
because like a balloon would just
yeah. And I was on this short film and we had a few squibs and did a take, and we only had one take of it. We did a take and one of them didn't go, and I was like, oh fuck, we need to get that one again and like do a close-up on it. So the producer's like, does anybody have a condom at all? And one dude's like, I got a fucking condom. So he runs out of his car and gets a condom. It's amazing.
He's like, but smoking a cigarette.
Also,
in the back,
yeah,
like,
call back to another movie. That guy fucks.
That guy fucks.
That guy
exactly fucks. Call back to another movie that.
Yeah. Don't keep talking.
You'll say you'll yeah see 2 weeks, I guess. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, I thought you guys were going to go to I'm Buck and I'm here to fuck.
Oh,
hey,
true.
Hey.
Fuck
like Buck, how
that's
messed
a,
up.
That's a good tie back.
How
do you
messed
want a
up is that scene?
Yeah.
And then like that's what's wild about Pussy Wagon. How like that's the name of the guy's truck who's like yeah orchestrating all his shit. Or
it's
no,
so
his name
fucked
is Buck
up.
Buck
it's,
is the guy with the
it's
truck.
So fucked
yeah
up.
It's Buck's truck.
Yeah.
And Buck's
and the way
trying to
she
fuck
kills him is so great because he's such a fuck.
Oh yeah.
That
yeah
she just literally like satisfying smashes his just head with the door and
straight
he's like,
up, dude.
That was a funny moment.
He's
pushed up hitting me.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
But also, how savage was it for her to get him down to the ground by just coming around straight for the Achilles, dude?
Yeah.
I hate that so much.
Oh, dude. It churns your blood when you're watching it.
I watched this with Catherine. She goes, this movie's disgusting.
Dude, your Achilles is under so much tension that that just shoots up.
Goodbye.
Cool.
That muscle's all the
so
way up.
So moving
in your
on
ass
from that,
you can't take the gore.
No, I mean I can take gore. It's just thinking of that that's
it's
a little much.
It's unsettling, dude.
That's a little much. Visual style. We kind of touched on it a little bit with the editing. The amount of times that this film changes from black and white to color to black and white to anime to so many different styles, and it's so effortless and so like clean.
Yeah.
It does it so well. Do you have a favorite one of those? I think I think my favorite one is in the middle of that fight scene.
She pulls his eyes out.
Yeah.
And it goes
and
black and white.
It changes black and white. It's like, it's fuck. That's so, such so good. Such a perfect moment to switch that. Like you want to make a narrative choice to go to black and white. I don't even know if it was narrative. I think it might have been like ratings wise, right?
Because like
for the amount of blood or whatever.
NC-17 rating.
Yeah. They had to have like a percentage of like blood on screen or something like that. It was like how much time or something like that. I don't know. But that's such a perfect moment to like change the color.
Yep.
And then they come back. When do they come back to it? Is it after?
It's like a good 2 minutes.
Is it like when she like gets knocked down or something? It's another like clean transition like that to where it comes back.
Yeah.
But I forget when it is.
I'm trying to think of it. I mean, it's definitely before.
It's before she goes into the silhouette, which looks fucking amazing.
That silhouette's like iconic.
It's iconic, so good. But it also, it did drive me nuts on both watches. To when it establishes that space and it's like, you can see the height of the wall is like this height. And then it goes to the silhouette and it's like double the height.
Yeah.
That did bother me a little bit.
Did it? That didn't bother me.
No.
No, it's iconic, but it's like, it was one of those things that I was like, I have a very logic driven brain. And for that brain, seeing that was like, it drove me up a wall the first
interesting
watch.
Talking about fight scenes. Do you guys have a favorite one from this movie? I mean, the obvious one is to say the big fight scene with all the 88s, right?
Oh, I was going to say her and Oren Ishii.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That could be your choice. Is that your favorite too?
No, I think mine is probably with Vivica A. Fox in the kitchen because of the knife and the abruptness of that. Like, and the way that that whole scene unfolds where her daughter comes home.
Oh, and they have that. There's that. Dude, I love the fact that like this movie does a great job of letting scenes breathe, like right in the middle of it. Because there's that in that same exact scene that you're talking about, the school bus pulls up. You see it in the background and you see them pause.
Yep.
And it's like they're looking at each other just like.
And then they do the.
Yep.
Knife behind the back.
Like, yeah. And then they do that again at the end.
It's like a mutual respect kind of deal.
But they do that again with Oren's fight scene. They do it a couple of times.
And she goes, what'd she say? She's like, are you ready?
Ready.
Ready. Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah. Are you ready?
I'm so glad you said that because I made a absolute note of that because it's like, as that scene unfolds, she's just like, she looks at her and she's like, you ready? And it's not like you ready to continue fighting because they both know it's
like, you're ready to die.
You're ready to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was in
that moment,
cool
in that moment where she goes, oh, that really is a Hatemura. What is it? Is it Hati?
It's Hattori Hanzo.
Hattori Hanzo, you're right.
Yeah. And I love that character.
And it's like, damn, that really is one of his swords. As her head flew off, like as her scalp.
Top part of her, yeah, that was a weird
I think it got half of her brain or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I like that she does scalp her because it's like, she's like, you see her hair flying. And at first you're like, then she get her head chopped off. Yeah. But then it's like, oh, that was.
Hattori
Hanzo.
Hattori Hanzo. She's like, that was a Hattori Hanzo sword.
It's all because I think she tried blocking with the sword, right? But it cut right through it.
Yo, y'all want to know what's actually like nuts with that scene?
Huh.
Is right when they're starting.
They actually chopped her head off.
No.
No, just the scalp.
That'd be gnarly. But no, right when they start that scene, Oren turns to the bride and is like, I hope you saved your energy or whatever. I doubt you're going to last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Was it 5 minutes exactly?
It was 4 minutes and 59 seconds before the pause. And then after the pause, all in all, that whole scene was 5 minutes and 30 seconds.
Damn.
Dang.
Which is fucking cool.
That's clean. I love clean. Shit like that. Yeah. It's like so like perfect. Because you could do that and most people aren't going to know.
No, but
or you could not do that and play it like it was, and nobody's ever gonna like really care. Some brand perspective.
Those are the details that's not blah, 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 but like film buffs figure out. Like those are the things that like
it's not.
That's
it's
why
not even
Tarantino's so invested in his stuff because he's like, I'm doing these little touches of like these little hidden gems throughout the film.
I feel like it's not even a film buff thing. I feel like it's a
attention to detail.
It's more of a pride thing for him. He's like, it doesn't matter how long this is, but I'm going to make it.
Well, I'm saying you don't notice them unless you are like more into like,
I feel like even film buffs like understand that that's really hard to do.
Oh yeah.
So they're going to understand if it's not perfect, right? You can aim for that, but it's just that like Todd was saying, the attention.
How do you
detail,
get that scene to play out in the time? You probably like, do it 45,000 fucking times.
Yeah.
Well, no, I feel
it's
like
it's gotta be all down to editing, right?
Yeah.
It comes down
to the edit
a little bit. Yeah.
But it's just so like, I'm going to like, why does it need to be like that? Cause I want it to be like that.
But you still have to have the action for the editor. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, you have to have that action be concise.
Yeah. And it has to make sense.
Yeah.
What's your favorite death?
You my favorite
about
death?
Who's
okay.
My favorite?
Well, let me answer my favorite fight scene. Cause you said it was the first fight scene.
Yeah.
You said it was
Oren.
I think mine might be with Oren's
the bald henchman?
Left hand. No, not the bald henchman. The other one.
Oh, Gogo or whatever.
Gogo. The fucking weapon she's using, that like flail ball chain thing. That's so sick. And I don't know if you guys were as satisfied with watching it as I was, but the way she would like. I don't know if that's actually how that's done, but she like flicks the chain with her foot and shoots it
that
out.
That is how it's done.
I was like, that's the fucking coolest thing ever. That was like so sick. And the bride should have lost that fight. That's all I'm saying. But I mean, whatever. It's
well,
fine.
That's how
she would have
rope style or chain combat is.
Then she stabs her in the foot.
Yeah.
And then
that's fair.
Yeah. And then also, hits her with that board.
It's a little like dirty fight almost. Like,
did you see the product placement in that shop?
The Nikes. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're all white Nikes.
Is that why you wore those?
But they were all white Nikes, but they were cloth. These are leather.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Yeah. Huge.
What up? But no, they were like cloth, and you don't see that there's the Nike logo because every shot it just shows it's a white sneaker. And then once the blood rolls in, the swoosh is leather. Yeah. So it's like everything else becomes blood red, and then it's just the Nike symbol right there. And that's how you do a product placement.
That's my favorite death, when the way she dies.
Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing,
she
actually.
Gets hit in the head, and then it shows. I thought
your favorite death was the knife throw after the shot.
That's my favorite kill.
It's your favorite kill.
Yeah.
Your favorite death.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Different thing.
Mm-hmm. They are different.
I think my favorite kill is Oren killing one of the bosses.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's such like a...
when his head just...
Goddamn, she means fucking business kind of moment.
Well, it's and then like, at the end when she's like, now you've seen what not to do.
Yeah. Like, actually, I think my favorite kill... Let me take it back. I think my favorite kill is not a kill. Is... I know that sounds dumb.
Cuts the lawyer's arm off.
Cuts the lawyer's arm off and keeps her alive and throws her down the hill to the hospital. Yeah. I think that's like... I think that might be my favorite because it's the restraint. You know what I mean? Like, it's so easy to write a character to kill everybody. But like, you can have that one person like live. I think it's... And actually, you know what? My favorite kill is all of the kills
favorite kill.
Yeah, he's got a lot. He's got a lot.
My favorite kill is... I just continued all of my point. I realize it.
Spit it out, Junior.
Stop. My favorite kill is all of the kills that she doesn't have. She steps up on the banister and she goes, all of you that are lucky enough to like leave with your lives, leave now or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, I read that that's not how the script
was written.
That.
Interesting. Yeah. I just like that moment because it's
they're
like,
all supposed to die.
She was like so much better than all of them. She's like, you can go with your lives. You mean nothing to me kind of deal.
But also, but like, leave your limbs are mine. Yeah.
I think that's my favorite kill, maybe. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Speaking of that scene, actually, when she's on the railing and the lawyer, when she says that and the lawyer starts to drift away.
Yeah.
And she's like, not you. You stay right there.
You stay, Sophia, or something like that.
Yeah, Sophia.
Sophie.
Yeah.
Sophie. This is where Tarantino is like such a film buff, is that he's starting to reference his own movies because he calls back to that in Django Unchained when Samuel L. Jackson's character is in the house and Django's about to blow up the whole freaking place. And he goes, you stay
damn,
right
that's a
there.
Deep cut.
It's a deep cut. Also, he does give Samuel L. Jackson a cameo in Kill Bill.
What? Where? First one or a second?
First one.
Where?
Don't tell me.
You never see his actual face.
Is he on a billboard or something?
Nope. He's in one of the pinnacle scenes, the driving factor. He's at the wedding.
Really?
He's the organ player.
Oh, shit. Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't show a close-up of him, though, do they?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Interesting. So he's one of the 9 people that died at the wedding.
Yeah. Also,
you had to have looked that up.
Yeah, I did.
He does research.
I do research. Anyways,
like, there's no way you notice that.
But even then, though, it's like that's where he is just like a masterful storyteller, is because like, you know, a Tarantino movie is almost always going to have Samuel Jackson in it in some form or fashion, because like the only movie off the top of my head of his that I know doesn't feature Samuel would be Inglourious Basterds.
Did you look up if there's one in there?
No, I didn't. But it's also like, I
wonder if there is.
I doubt it makes. Damn. Yeah, it could be. I don't know.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was in Kill Bill.
I think he was in Kill Bill either. But I bet you that his character, when he got killed in the wedding.
Yeah.
Right before he died, said, motherfucker. <got killed.
laughs> Had to.
In the church.
Really? I was also, this isn't like tying into the movie in any way, but the entire time with that wedding scene, I was questioning, like,
you want to go back to
right
after the motherfucker.
Yeah. So basically with that whole wedding scene, it doesn't really tie into like the movie that well, but it was just a question that I had. And I don't know if it actually gets revealed in volume 2, but who is the bride marrying? What's the purpose of the wedding?
I don't.
I mean, she was having a kid, right? So whoever the father was.
No, the father's Bill.
Oh, never mind.
But she was running away from her life to get married.
Yeah. So I'm I don't know if it gets revealed
to
in
get
volume
out of
two.
The life. Oh, shit. Yeah. And that's why she talks about Vivica Fox. Like, why would, like, when she's like, oh, what, you want to get even? She's like, no, to get even, I'd have to kill you, your husband,
and your,
and
daughter.
Your daughter. And then we'd be square.
Really? Yeah. Like, that's what
that's such a great, like, then we'll be square. Yeah. It's such like a great, like, I have the power here moment.
Yeah. That's what was crazy to me about that scene. The only thing that I don't like about the scene is like, how does she miss that shot of shooting?
I was going to say that earlier, but it's,
but I guess it's through a box.
I don't know how often you guys go shooting.
Not.
It's not
once a year.
If you're not looking down the sights, it's not
easy. It's not easy.
It's not easy. Like just trying to like shoot somebody like that.
But she's an assassin.
Yeah,
but I mean, she's at least training, 4 years reserved.
Yeah, she's like, out of training.
No, actually, so she's an assassin, but the bride does say,
"Oh, knives were your thing."
That yeah. She was the best with a straight blade or something.
I heard
like
you
that.
Were good. Yeah, yeah.
Best
yeah.
edged weapon.
Best yeah. edged weapon. So,
yeah, maybe she's not good with guns.
Yeah,
she's
not good with fair guns. Enough.
But that's what's crazy is then Uma Thurman kills her with a knife.
Yeah, but also. It's also interesting.
But she threw the knife, so it was cheating.
Because when they're going through the origin story of Oren, it's a lot of gun-based violence.
It is.
So
and then
like,
Oren loses the sword fight.
Yeah, so it's like Oren might have been good with guns. The
well,
bride
you know she
good.
Was because she's under the bed as a kid shooting their kneecaps yep. off.
Also, I'm not going to lie. Oren's sword in the crime boss scene was fucking clean, dude.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, I don't know, it was like a polished... like sword that was flush with the hilt and then it had like some like cherry blossoms on it. That shit was sick as fuck.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, that was pretty clean.
She used that in the final battle.
I don't think it is the one that she used in the final battle.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. It's clean. I like
it's
the look of it.
A super it clean look and a super clean sheath. Like mm-hmm. I think the double duty of that is cool. But it's
really good.
It's
like hidden in the sheath. Like it looks like one piece together
yeah.
and then it's
yeah. Fine. I do have to give light a little bit of light, talk about it a little bit. Is the intro to Hattori Hanzo and like that whole interaction where Uma's mm-hmm. playing down the fact she doesn't know Japanese, anything like
and then
that.
She can speak Japanese.
Yeah, it was a very fun moment because it's like they're both playing a part that's not who they truly are. And then mm-hmm. it's like, okay, let's cut the bullshit, get to the chase, all of that. But then when they're going through and like she's checking out all the stores and he's like, oh, I'm retired, all of that before she talks him into it. You know, when he was like, it's weird, this yellow haired woman loves swords and I love baseball, and then turns and hucks the baseball right at her. That was practical.
Yeah, I know. That was, I read that.
And yeah.
But it wasn't Uma Thurman. It was
no,
her
it was her stunt yeah. double who also
like,
broke
hats
her
off.
Back.
Hats off to that stunt double.
That stunt double broke her back during production and didn't tell anybody because she didn't want to lose her part.
Damn.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild.
Yeah. But also, damn. I also. Carrying on with the Hattori Hanzo story, how great is it that like when he is handing off the sword after the couple months of training that he's like, this is literally the finest sword I've ever crafted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like can that just, was beautiful.
This is a little moment that probably not a lot of people like care about. But when he wrote Bill in the window, it was so fucking clean.
It was so
yeah.
clean.
I was like, yeah, this man's a calligrapher.
The little
yeah.
accent.
Yeah. Well, accent. I watched that. I was like, you know, Tarantino told him to add that accent to the eye to make it look more like Japanese or like script or something.
I almost feel like it was art design because it was like kind of like,
I feel like, dude, if he was actually writing that, that gotta be so like, how many times do you think they shot that?
That's what I'm
like,
saying. I think like he probably wrote it because then they cut away.
I don't know.
And then they cut back to it by itself. After he does it,
I don't think so.
He presses and
does
the eye.
It, does
oh,
it?
Yeah. And then it kind of, he does kind of bring his hand.
But then also a similar moment when with Thurman like wipes it off. And then, like, there's like a little tiny bit left in the corner. Yeah. And she like finishes it.
Dude, I love like, that. Oh, that's like the little details that it's just like, I don't even want
it feels
this
real.
Name near me.
Yeah. It feels real, kind of.
Yeah.
It's like you're like, let's be honest. If you're a person, you're wiping that off, like you might not have to be super particular, but like, oh shit, missed a little bit. Let me like fix it. Like in a movie,
it's like a OCD.
Yeah. It's just like, there's no reason to do it, but there's also no reason not to do it. So it feels more real, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just like little details like that kind of grounds the world a little bit.
I know. I feel that.
I don't know.
So
what do I know?
No. With the film, like obviously there's a lot of like micro elements that are interesting, but like what are some of the standouts to you? Whether that's something technical that it did or
it's gotta be the fight scenes.
Yeah, I mean the fight
and
scenes,
how they shot them too.
I think something that stood out to me this time when I watched it, because I rewatched it. Like this is one of my plane movies. So mm-hmm. like I'll always watch it. If it's on a plane, I'm gonna watch it because it's perfect time. It's like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I think like when I watched it this time, I didn't realize how many comedy bits there were throughout. Mm-hmm. Like when Gogo is like, when the bride says to Gogo, she's like, I'm going to give you a chance to leave. And she's like, ha, ha, ha. Like she starts laughing.
Oh yeah. She's like, you call that begging?
Yeah. And then she kind of is like, goes back to this thing and it's kind of funny. And
oh, that was
like,
great.
There's like little funny moments like that, you know. It was like, it was kind of awkwardly funny, but weird. Yeah,
I feel like that was one of the anime references, though.
Right.
Yeah. Of like the like cover your mouth, little slight giggle, yeah. Hello Kitty kind of yes, shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was like what was funny about like, or what was weird about this movie is I didn't realize how funny it was.
Yeah, there's like a lot of little moments of humor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it keeps you engaged.
Like the spanking with the sword. That's a really obvious one.
That's like, the funniest moment.
Yeah,
that is
pretty good. Yeah. What's another funny part? Another funny scene? I mean,
the funny scene.
When you, oh, yeah. Are you Buck? And you like, fuck.
Like the callback.
That part's
there.
Pretty good. Yeah.
One of the funny parts is like when it's like, okay, now the hard part's over. 13 hours later, she steps out of the car.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Another one would be in the final, like, location, and Lucy Liu's up top, Oberyn, I guess, and the bride's down below. She just goes, silly rabbit. And they're both tricks are for kids.
I didn't understand that, but it was so random.
It's a callback to her name.
Oh.
Her name is Beatrix Kiddo.
Got it.
So
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. I mean, you're only going to pick it up if you pause the movie on the exact moment that they hand over the plane ticket.
I mean, I knew that was her name, but I did not know that is why they did the tricks for kids.
I guess that makes sense. Now. I just didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
It's a callback to when they were like assassins together.
Same thing with Bill saying kiddo all the time. I didn't pick up on that either.
Yeah.
There's like so many details. That's what's great about a really solid director, like a really detailed director, is all those little things. Those are the little things that make stuff. Even if you don't notice them the first time, you might notice them eventually.
Well, I found out the way he writes screenplays is he basically writes a novella and then adapts it into a screenplay. So it's a more formulated script by the time he turns it into a script. Like it's always, he writes it as if someone's going to read the script as a story on its own without any camera movements or directions like that. And then he just adds that stuff in after the fact. So it's a full story before he actually turns it to a screenplay.
That's probably how they got it in two parts too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in the screenplay. I don't think that they were like, we got to make this. And I think they wrote it and they were like, this is long.
It was 240 pages.
We got to make it two movies.
Yeah.
Or two parts.
Yeah.
One movie.
Yeah. One movie, two parts. Still long as fuck. I think it's like 4 hours all in all if you watch both.
Yeah. But I mean, he's kind of known for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like his movies are longer and like, I think he kind of takes some of that from like Kubrick length of not the length of film, but the length of some of the shots. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something else that stands out.
He likes to linger on shots.
He hangs on the shot forever. The opening scene, mm-hmm. you're just close up on her face for the longest time. And then there's like that crazy animated gun of the chamber hitting and like the bullet shooting through.
Coming through. Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's what, honestly, one thing like that I noticed is that
the bullet bugged me a little
shots,
bit.
Even if it's just not hanging on shot, but like a long shot, like the overheads.
Yeah.
Like the one in the bathroom.
They linger.
Yeah. It takes a while and then it sits on her for a minute.
Yeah.
No, that's what I meant earlier by like the editing gives it time to breathe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like there's so much action and there's
like a
movements.
Beat or two that like lets you kind of have those moments of like brevity or not brevity, but like, I guess calm.
Mm-hmm.
But that gun bugged me.
The animated gun,
the one that when the bullet's coming at you,
yeah,
the bullet. Because
you see the
me.
Rifling, but it's not spinning.
Oh,
that just kind of bugged me a little bit.
Also, the bullet itself didn't seem like proper material or like the proper it's casing fine. For what it was.
It was weird too that it wasn't like
it was just a full. It
why
wasn't,
didn't
it
he go to the full like bracket. You know anime style?
Yeah,
like that was a random choice almost. You know.
That was at the beginning, right? That's when he shot.
It's like her. When he shoots her right at the very beginning in the head.
I don't know. Probably because that's not the animated part, right? Because that's the Western inspired part, not the
right. I guess, but it's
Japanese
so
inspired part. I don't
different.
Know.
Mm-hmm. You know.
You know what was weird with the Western part of the film when they're like portraying El Paso?
The El Paso.
It was like the sheriff or the dude that's driving up at the start of the scene. Did
that's
you see
a comedy.
How many sunglasses?
Oh, aviators. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was so curious about that.
That's another comedy point.
Yeah.
It's just those are details that Tarantino likes to throw in the movies. He makes characters complex, even if they're a throwaway character like that.
Right. Yeah.
Like, what's something that this cop
Charlie
has?
Brown.
He has all kinds of different sunglasses. That's one of those comedy things, too. And also, like, when he's like, damn, this what does he call her? Like this beautiful something, whatever. It's like really weird language.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, and then she like spits
on him.
Yeah. And he's like, well, she's not dead.
Yeah.
Like, that's,
oh,
another, yeah, yeah. That's another one of those like comedy moments is like, he's like, damn, to kill this woman.
Yeah.
It's like, spits well, right, she's not dead.
Yeah.
Nah, dude.
It's like the little comedy moments.
Yeah. Nothing.
So was my mic too far away or anything?
Yeah.
Sorry. I wasn't paying attention. I was just talking. It's fireside chat.
Fireside chat.
Question for you guys. Do you have a favorite character from this movie?
Yes. Hattori. I for a throwaway or a side character, there was so much, like we were saying just a moment ago, like there's so much character development to the guy that it's like it brings intrigue, but it's also like the dude played it well. Obviously, like Oren is a great character, and I think they nailed it on the casting. Uma Thurman gives a great performance. Can't remember the other people because they don't get much screen time.
They don't matter.
But
so you would say Hattori.
Hattori is just a character that I was like, for as little screen time as he got, I thought it was a very influential person and like kind of a staple of the world that they built.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Man, I don't know. I mean, I like the Go-Go character because she's just insane. Yeah. What's the scene that they flash back to? What does she do for the kill on that guy?
At the bar?
Yeah.
So
oh,
like,
she's like, oh,
stabs him. Yeah, she just stabs him because the guy was like, do you want to penetrate me? Yeah. It looks like I penetrated you.
Like, guts him.
Yeah. Dude, I didn't notice that until the second watch that like literally his
intestines fall out.
Yeah, dude, that was
and
gross.
She's like, what's crazy is that they're like, oh, she's a 17-year-old like prodigy.
She's fucking killer. Crazy.
Yeah, you know? She's fucking crazy.
Yeah. But what's crazy is how like quick and abruptly she dies when she's whooping the bride's ass. She's literally just a pointer and she died. But like I thought her character was so good and she was funny. She was like insane badass. She's this younger girl that's like everybody else is like these all these men around that are just can't even hang with the bride, you know?
Not at all.
Like it's like the three guys run down the stairs with the bride and it's just like and they're all dead.
Dude, that moment was so cheesy but like great at the same time because like old school kung fu movies, they'll like fly down on wires from the top of the stairs and they're just like, we're gonna hit every single step on the way down.
But the way that they flew down, that they came down was so weird. It's almost like they were like floating down.
Coming on down.
There's like they have like an interesting like classic like samurai movie blocking to that. They like it kind of, there's another scene, but when they're coming down those stairs, they like kind of spread out and there's another one where they switch.
And like
there's like five that come at first or something like that, or like four or something. There's a larger group that comes first. And there's like they start with like two and two, and then they like spread out to be like more menacing. And the other ones they like swap. There's like a choreographed art to it almost.
Yeah.
And then when she's upstairs being chased by like the last big group of them left after the big fight, and then like four come in the door, and then like two slash through the paper wall or whatever. Like there's that kind of like such like a classic, like they spread out so you can see everyone. I feel like it's such like a classic like samurai movie thing. Is like
instead who's of your favorite up, character?
My favorite character, I think maybe Oren. Like she's got a like crazy cool origin story for it. Like I want to see more of like her character,
and
because kind of her character doesn't really do much of anything in the actual like Kill Bill part.
Yeah, there's subtleties to like Lucy Liu's performance as Oren that were like actually really enjoyable. Like she doesn't have to do a whole lot, but it's like when she's walking with the whole crew and like you can see the crew behind her, like, yeah, we're part of the crew, like all of that. And she just has that calm little smirk to her of like,
and
what's the meeting?
Yeah, and then she slices the dude's head off, and then she's like, I'm gonna say this part in English so you
and
understand.
And the translator's just like, I'm gonna say every word and love it.
I don't know, I just thought it was like, you're not going to question my heritage at all anymore or whatever.
Yep.
I don't know. I just thought it was just cool character.
I read something that he was trying to cast like a Japanese woman for that, I think.
Yeah, he was.
And I don't remember why he went with Lucy Liu. There was a reason.
He saw her in, it wasn't Charlie's Angels. It was another film that she did that was a similar action movie in the early 2000s.
And he's like, she's Oren.
Yeah, and he changed the script to say it's a person of Chinese, Japanese, American descent or something like that.
Yeah.
She's half Chinese, half Japanese American.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But yeah, I think she's a cool character.
She just holds so much power. It's just kind of like, so like
the sad part is she's a little Darth Vader-y.
Yeah.
Almost to where she's got so much power and like she looks like she's gonna like fuck some shit up, but in the end, she's kind of really on screen and doing cool stuff for like only like a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Like, well, the 5 minute fight scene.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but I mean like in comparative, like how much like it's kind of played up.
Yeah.
It felt a little Darth Vader-ish. It's like, oh, like I thought this was supposed to fight, be like someone like, crazy.
You know, everybody else before you get to her.
I know, but it was just like, it's just like she fought, like the bride just fought through how many dudes? Like, I don't care. Like,
right.
It was like hundreds, but like
94.
They could be, is it 94?
Total body count was 95.
Got it. So something like, how many guys was that? That was probably then
88, maybe.
80, yeah, maybe. Actually, probably you're not wrong. You might
it's
not
a
be
crazy
wrong.
88.
But she fights through all of those guys, right? And then they get to that fight scene. I understand the poetic to it, but it's just like a little like, damn, I just wish I saw like, because Go-Go's fight scene was way more intense than theirs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same with, what is her name? The Copperhead. I forget what her character's name is.
Yeah,
it's
like Vivian Green or something.
Yeah. Was it? Yeah. So her fight scene was more intense.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I was just kind of zoned out for that part of the movie. I feel like Oren had so much more hype coming up to it.
I feel like sometimes you do. Intro. You get fatigue from watching all the fighting.
Maybe.
You're like, this fight scene lasts because the scene at the
there was, it was much more poetic though.
Right.
That I think is kind of the much big more kicker poetic with that is it's like, it's the two lead fighters.
It was more of like a fighters dance than a fight almost.
Because it's like they should, like they got the same training basically. Yeah. They were all proteges of Bill's. So it's like they know what each other knows. So it's like you're not going to go and exert an unnecessary move.
It was less brute force and more like art and countering.
It's
kind
like
of
a chess
it's
match.
Like it, yeah, yeah. That's more of what it was.
Yeah.
And there is a beauty to that. And it's still a really cool fight scene. I know you said that was your favorite fight scene.
Yeah, for sure.
I really like the part where they're like on the other side of the fence and instead of like going back to the other side, they like scale across, use the momentum of them like staying on the other side of the fence. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe because I liked the idea for like origin story and like how cool she seemed, I wanted to see more of her character do stuff. But in the end, just kind of sits there and watches her people get destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Now, I feel like we're kind of slowing down right now. So well, I was gonna say boys.
One more thing real quick.
One more thing?
One of my favorite parts of the movie was the classic Old West samurai movie Call Out, where she has Sophie like at like knife point, I guess. And she like calls out in Japanese, Oren.
We have unfinished
business. That moment's such like a cool, like I listened to it like a couple of times because I think Japanese sounds really cool.
It does.
It does, yeah.
But she like yells, Oren, we have unfinished business. And like everything stops. It's like that classic like bar fight scene. Just like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Hush runs over the crowd.
But I just wanted to say that before I forgot it.
But no, I mean, there's obviously so many different ways that we could rank or rate this movie, but let's just tie it into the world of Tarantino because he's the only one that kind of makes films the way he does.
What Tarantino film? Are you saying which?
Like, how does this rank?
Where
in
does
order?
It fall like in on your list of Tarantino's? You don't have to explain your list. You just have to state the number where it falls in that list.
Got it. How many has he made right now?
Nine.
Is that including Kill Bill as both one and two, or is that as one?
Kill Bill is one.
Both Kill Bills is one. So
technically, but we're only going to talk we're based about off volume of volume one.
We're
right
rating
now.
Both kind of right now.
Because like it's a
they fall as one. Technically, but we've only seen volume one, so let's just say where volume one would fall.
So is this something we're gonna start doing this season?
Oh yeah.
All right, we're just gonna rake them.
Rank, rate.
We're gonna rake them.
Kind of mixed rate and rank together.
Yeah,
we're gonna rank
them. I noticed.
Damn, that's kind of rank, bro.
Did you smell rank?
So we're gonna rate movies this season. All right, cool. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where does this one fall but in your Tarantino?
Well, we'll go with you first.
Yeah, you're the guest.
You're the guest.
I would say probably 4 or 5.
Okay.
Like
really?
Yeah. I mean, because
what's your number one? I know we didn't say that, but what's your
once upon a time?
Really? Yeah, one, really?
Probably.
That's a very controversial one.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Either that or, man, I don't know. Like, I'd say in that five is Once Upon a Time, Inglourious Basterds, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, and
Kill Bill.
Kill Bill.
Damn,
that's true.
I didn't like Django.
I do, but it's just
it doesn't hit quite
just,
as hard.
It's just not as good as the other ones.
No, yeah, it doesn't do the same thing that the other ones do.
I feel
Once
that.
Upon a Time, like the gore and the kill scenes and that. In some of those, and just like the way that movie plays, like the color of it, it's fun, it's cool.
Oh, it's
Inglourious
cool.
Bastards is like
that's so my good, one. That's
my Inglourious Bastards is me, my yeah. one. Inglourious Bastards is
honestly,
my
it's got to be one or two. Like Pulp Fiction is also
Pulp Fiction's good for me. Pulp Fiction gets a little slow.
Yeah, I could see that.
So but for me, so that falls a little down a little bit, yeah. but it's still good. Like there's nothing wrong with it. It's just a little slow.
Inglourious Bastards is incredible. That's kind of why I prefaced it as like ranking it into your Tarantino's, though, is because it's like all of his movies are good. And it's like if we ranked them outside of a Tarantino frame, they would all be up there.
Yeah.
You know,
so you're saying five?
Five. Four. Five. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd probably say four.
Four?
Yeah. Because it's like Jackie Brown, that's getting nowhere near the top. You know, Jackie Brown is probably one of his lesser quality movies, not to like devalue that film, but it's just different.
Well, this is hard.
It is hard. Literally had to sit here and think for like 2 or 3 days over this. This is why I love putting.
I'm not prepared for this. I think I'm gonna say
we're gonna hold you to whatever you say.
Three, yeah. three or four.
Three or four.
That's nice. Yeah,
that's solid.
Inglourious Basterds definitely has been number one.
Inglourious Basterds.
I think that might have been the first Tarantino movie I've ever seen.
Yeah,
same.
And
actually,
I also so that has a play to it. But I also love World War II and the fact that it's just beating the shit out of Nazis is fucking great.
Yeah,
oh, like, it's entertaining. It's so
amazing. Dude. So great.
And Christoph Waltz.
And Christoph Waltz great is really good too.
That oh yeah, incredible. Like around the board.
Oh yeah.
You know what's crazy is Antonio Margheriti. That's one of his producers and for like half of his other films.
Oh, nice.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
What about like a rating out of 10? What do you get?
Rating out of 10? All right. For Tarantino or like for just out
of
movies
like
in
this
general?
Movie, you're rating this movie out of 10?
Yeah, just 1 to 10, number grade.
Oh, you go.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to say 8.
8?
Yeah. Okay. Fun and entertaining, but like there are things that personally weren't the best to me, but it's still a fantastic movie. So it's not like I want to discredit it.
Yeah. I would say an 8, 8.5.
Okay.
Yeah. I was going to say like 8.6.
Okay. Solid.
8.6, which is funny because I rated it higher, but it ranks a little lower maybe for me in the Tarantino films. But I also think that it's so watchable.
Yeah.
It is very watchable.
I rewatch it and I do not like to do that. Like
it's what is really? It?
It's like a 2-hour movie. I don't like movie. To rewatch films very often.
Oh. I'm not a big rewatcher.
It's got to be
good. I get bored sometimes. That's one of the reasons why I get bored of Pulp Fiction. I know that might be a little
I don't rewatch Pulp Fiction. I've seen it like a handful of times, maybe four or five times. But
that might be a little I mean, I've said some things in the podcast before.
People are going to be mad about that.
If you don't like watching Tarantino, then said some things in the podcast before, but what I'm saying is I Pulp Fiction has like kind of like it's not there's a rewatchability to it, but not as much as Kill Bill or like Inglourious Basterds or something.
Absolutely.
Pulp Fiction is one of those movies that Kill Bill too, but it's one of those movies that when it comes on TV you watch it like halfway through wherever it is, you know what I mean? Like if I see
you can jump
on,
in the
like,
movie
I'm just gonna
100%
like, if it's on YouTube TV or something, I'm like okay, I'm just gonna watch this late at night and put it on,
sure,
yeah,
fall asleep to it or something.
I'd always suggest people to watch it because it's a good movie, but I don't know if I would go out and be like, hey, I want to watch Pulp Fiction right now, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not one of those things.
I get that. Yeah. I will say I'm like
there are some great fucking moments in that movie, but the movie as a whole it's long and it's kind of drags on a little bit, I think. But we're not talking about that movie right now. We're talking about Kill Bill. And I think Kill Bill is kind of the opposite. I feel like not a lot of the movie drags on. It like
100%.
It goes the whole time. I think the only part that would drag on a little bit is the Hattori part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That drags on like a little bit, but it's like
for a month.
Yeah, but it's like
but they breeze over it. Yeah. You don't even get like a training montage. No. I feel like it would have done
perfect
okay.
opportunity
yeah.
for it. Yeah.
That would have been fine.
I think a training montage would have been fine, but I feel like it didn't need it either. Because the story it's telling the story so out of order that time already isn't important to the viewer, I don't think.
No, you're not moving on like a linear time path. Yeah. So it doesn't
matter.
You don't have to.
It's not even like you're not moving linearly, but you're also moving like different speeds sometimes, right?
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes you're jump cutting a month. Sometimes you jump cut a few hours. Sometimes you jump cut a few hours, but like you're in the same spot, like with the cart. I keep on bringing the car thing up, but like you're jump cutting more than 12 hours later, but it's still the exact same spot versus your jump cutting from when he says he's going to make the sword to when she already has it kind of deal. That I feel like you don't need a montage there because you can just like take from the fact that, she's going to get the training. Like, who cares? You want to see the cool fights instead of the, I'm going to slash a dummy for like for forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I got you.
Yeah. Definitely solid movie. I'd say 8.5.
Okay.
I think I upgraded it from an 8.
You said 8.5.
Yeah.
It's an 8.5, more like a solid 8.
Yeah. I'm just glad that Todd finally watched it
because it's
fair enough. I feel like you watch a lot of movies and
watched it and he watched it twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did say to Dustin like a day ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I had zero intentions of ever watching this film and I'm glad he recommended it because it's fun. I don't like karate movies.
It's not a karate movie. It's a samurai movie.
Same fucking difference.
No.
There is no karate chops in this movie.
Fair.
There are a few punches, a few door slams, a couple kicks probably.
Yeah, a couple kicks.
I don't think any karate chops.
I don't think any like throat chops. Like
That would have been cool to see.
That. Yeah. What Tarantino movie is that in? Where someone gets throat punched and they're just like...
Oh, that's one of the more recent ones.
Is it... It might be.
No! It's Django.
Is it Django?
Oh no!
It's either Django and Glorious Bastards or Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
To where someone gets punched in the
throat. It's Once Upon a Time. I think.
It might be Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
They just get punched in the throat and they're just kind of like sitting there on the cameras, just like watching.
Yeah.
Like joke.
No,
for
I was thinking of I was thinking of Jonah Hill's character in Django for a second.
Jonah Hill characters in Django is such a small throwaway character. It's fucking amazing.
Anyways, so either of y'all have any last words you guys want to say about this film?
I think that we've already had the discussion about it being a cult classic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a cult classic. I think it's a movie that everybody who likes movies should at least see once, but I feel like you have to rewatch it a couple of times. And it gets better the more you watch it. And like I said, I'm not that type of a movie watcher.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that for me is why, I don't know why I like it so much or why it resonates. I think it's just, it's fun.
It's nostalgic probably.
Yeah, it's nostalgic. And it's like so different and unique than anything else that was happening at the time. You know what I mean? So that's what I think about it.
Okay. How about you, Dom?
Yeah, I kind of agree. It's like, it's if you like movies, you're gonna like this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly, I don't know if you guys will agree, but this movie, the amount of like gore and violence in this movie doesn't feel like the same amount as other movies. Like, it feels toned down, even though it's not.
Yeah,
like it feels,
it's like normalized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it feels almost more normalized because it's like you're slashing with swords rather than like blowing people's like arms off with guns, I guess. I don't know. It feels more grounded and almost like less like when I think of Inglourious Basterds or
End Scene of Hateful Eight
or Hateful Eight or Django where the house fight, I just think of like so much gore, bloody explosion, stuff like that. But this one, I don't think of that. I think of more of just like cool sword fighting. It's like different. I don't know. But
that's where this Tarantino differs from like a lot of his other ones is this one spaced out a lot of the gore, whereas lot of his movies,
all of it's packed
all
into
of
one
gore is packed into the last chapter.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
So it's more spaced out.
Maybe that's why I think of it less, because the big crescendo moment of those Glorious movies Bastards, is all the ultra violence in one moment versus this movie. You're right. It's kind of spread out. So it feels like each moment of violence is less, and there is, you know what else it is probably? It's the black and white.
Yeah.
The amount of gore and blood in that big fight scene is kind of cut down by the fact it looks more artistic and it's more like about, not about the red blood everywhere. It's more about the choreography, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. So I was going to say, a lot of people, there's like two different like schools of thought. You either like Tarantino because you like that kind of movie, or you hate it because you don't like the ultra violent gory movie. And I was going to say, this one, in terms of how I feel about it, feels less ultra violent gory. Not saying there is none. There's a lot. If you really hate that, don't watch this movie. But like, it feels like there's less. Because I feel like the big moment of the movie is her killing Oren. There isn't any, like, there's almost no gore in that.
Yeah.
I mean, her head gets...
Well, you do see her brain.
You see her brain. But, like, in terms of, like, gushing blood, there's almost...
Yeah. You would expect, a full halo almost shooting out the top of her head or something.
Yeah, it's just... it feels different in that aspect to other Tarantino films, even though if you look at it, it's probably pretty similar. I think that's what you're saying. It's kind of spread out, so it feels...
Mm-hmm. It's definitely spaced.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I guess if you don't like gore at all, don't watch this movie. But if you're like chill with it, then it doesn't feel over gory.
Yeah, if you're chill with it, for sure. Yeah.
If you're Kill Bill with it.
Yeah.
Chill Bill, baby.
Chill Bill. All right, kiddo.
Yeah. Nah.
What about you? Any plugs?
Yeah, we can open the floor. You got anything you want to plug?
We just plug things on this now?
Well,
I mean, I guess you get to decide that.
Yeah.
The bank
roll
gets
Dylan works
decide.
For you. We weren't going to ask him if he had anything to plug. It would just be your stuff.
You mean weren't going to ask him anything to plug in 2 weeks?
I hope more people get to come on this thing. Like, I think that would be really cool, because I think it is fun to like review films, and like it actually takes me back a little bit, because like when I was in college and did a Stanley Kubrick film class, like that was so fun to watch and critique the films. It makes you, it changes the way that you view films. And I think that I hope we get to get some like really cool guests on here that like don't know film sometimes too. I would love to see that. But no, I mean, I think like plugging as far as 12 Midnight, you know, I mean, like let's plug 12 Midnight. Shout out 12 Midnight. Shout out Theater Cleaners. Mm-hmm. You know, thanks for having me on today, guys.
Appreciate
it. It's fun to watch that stuff and do that again. So
yeah, we'll have you back.
Yeah, we gotta do another one. And I gotta do not a Tarantino film.
Yeah.
Because I want to see what else I can get y'all to. What haven't you seen that's like a big movie?
That's a hard question to ask me, because I don't know what I haven't seen, right?
Yeah. I'm definitely going to bring whatever I'm going to bring a movie.
You're going to just think that we haven't seen?
No, I'm going to make sure that people know what it is, because I want people to like also see these, you know.
Got it. Because I'll be honest, Todd and I have watched a lot of movies that not a lot of people have seen.
Oh, you definitely have seen way more movies than me.
For sure.
I'm also, what I was trying to say earlier today was I am a serial like rewatcher.
If Todd is a rewatcher. I'm not a big rewatcher.
I will watch it multiple times, because I said this last season, I'll say it this season, and I'm sure I'll say it the rest of my life. The more you watch a movie, the more you're going to pick up on it. And it's like, I love the interesting tidbits that you don't pick up on your first watch.
That's true. I will rewatch movies. I'm not against it, but I usually don't unless I'm showing somebody a movie. So if you ever watch a movie that I've seen before with me and I'm showing it to you, it's because I want to show you this movie. It's like, I think you're going to like it. Like I'm putting effort into like you caring about this movie. So like watch it.
Yeah.
And don't say, no, I don't like this movie. That was my roommate.
Oh yeah.
No, I feel like everybody who enjoys cinema has been in that position before. Yeah,
How do you not like Amelie? What do you mean this movie's weird?
And you're sitting there on the couch just watching them and not the movie of like, you didn't laugh. Why didn't you laugh? That's the funny moment.
You're stabbing me in the heart right now.
You know what? We did a music video a few years ago, early days of 12 Midnight, and it was for a band from Fort Worth called Foxy Morons, and the song is called Uma Thurman. And there's some yellow stuff happening in that music video because of Uma Thurman from Kill Bill.
Well, that wasn't the one I was on, right?
No, this was like early.
That was early days.
Yeah, I think this was the very first shoot when we bought an FX9. It was the very first music video that we did. Or the very first shoot that we did.
You know what a funny story is? First, this might be a little long. We might cut out here.
We're going to leave it.
But
it's like the origin of why we're even here.
The origin
was our origin was one of the Foxy Moron shoots.
Yeah, it was.
That's what you told me.
Todd and I both get there before everybody else. We're like 15, 20 minutes early or something. And we're just like,
we walk up to the front of the location. Yeah. And we're both just standing there. And I look over to Dom. I'm like, hey, I'm supposed to be meeting 12 Midnight. here, you part of the group? And he was like, oh, I'm also meeting 12 midnight here.
Yeah, nice. We both had no idea.
Everybody else was late.
Everybody else was late. We were early or everybody else was late. Probably we were just standing out front. Yeah. Just like, well.
We were just like both there. Kind of like, I kind of thought Todd might knew what was going on.
I thought you knew.
He thought that I knew what was going on. Neither of us really knew what was going on.
And then we were on the shoot till like 3 a.m.
Yep.
No, but we did that Uma Thurman video, and then this was after that y'all met and started the
that's the origins of
how we became friends.
Yeah.
Nah.
How bizarre.
How bizarre?
How bizarre? How bizarre?
Yeah.
How bizarre? But
either way, I think this has been an actually really good episode, and I've really enjoyed the discourse of the conversation. And like you were saying, with having guests on this season, we are going to do a bit of a tour to 12 to start off, get everybody, all of our friends viewing at home or listening on the road or wherever they may be consuming this. We want to get them introduced to some of the people who make the content for 12 Midnight and a little bit of what we are and who we're about.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we can have you out here. And then
maybe we can review a film that we make.
Oh. True.
One day.
Yeah.
Well, let's make it happen.
Well, first you gotta make a film, right?
Yeah, we gotta make a film first.
Yeah.
That's feature.
That's step one.
Yeah. Lawrence of Arabian style feature. Intermission, 6 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I gotta say, probably everybody watching this agrees with me that you've probably been our favorite guest of the season so far.
Oh, boom. Yeah. Am I on the first episode?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Favorite guest of the season we've had on so far.
Wow.
Such high praise.
I mean,
such high praise.
Did you say of the season? Or did you say so far? Because Dylan was before me.
Of the season so far that viewers have seen.
Oh, but I was talking about Dylan was on the last season.
Dylan's on the last season. Dylan's been on two. So yeah. I did say season. Yeah. I did say season.
Yeah.
It's been great having you.
Yeah, thanks.
Absolutely.
Loved hearing what you thought about Kill Bill. Because honestly, I didn't know you were that into Kill Bill.
I'm not, like I said, it's like a 8.6.
I didn't know it was your plane movie. Because, you know, that's a good... It's a good question to ask people. What's your plane movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What movie you watch on planes?
I definitely watched A Man Named Otto.
Oh.
And I like cried on the plane. I was like, fuck.
See, that's not a good plane movie. That's not a good plane movie. That's
not a good plane movie.
Dude, that's like fucking.
It's a good movie.
I wouldn't even call that like a nightcapper movie either. That's not the movie you turn on at the end of the night.
That's a movie you kind of want to watch when you're sad a little bit. You're like, damn, I want to be sad.
Yeah. Like you kind of want to cry.
You're in the mood to cry. It's like a happy set.
I need to cry.
Right? Like it's a happy set.
Dude, I would say you're putting on that movie with the same vibe you go into putting on Marley and Me.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't watch that movie. I will never watch that movie again.
It's the first time I saw my dad cry.
It's a sad movie. We probably won't be ever reviewing that movie because it's too fucking sad.
We're all just gonna be bawling our eyes out.
Yeah, maybe we should have a watch party.
We should have
watch parties here.
You could just project on
that wall over there.
Yeah. Oh, well, I guess, should we just wrap this up real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of Theater Cleaners. Thanks for tuning in, and we're going to start churning more of these out for you guys, so stay tuned for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's been a blast. Here goes season two.
Cheers.